I have up on the screen a divided nation. Now, there's something wrong about that picture, however. I'm sure you people here already know what the picture is. The map doesn't really have divided the right way. It just kind of got country divided in half. But that's not really how it's divided. The division is in places like Detroit and Chicago, Los Angeles, and New York. It's in like in Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. Those were some divisions they're at. And so those little places really where that should be divided, except the country's cut in half, because that's not the reality of how it is. The last election we had, they always talk about how Illinois went for Hillary Clinton. You hear it all the time, Illinois went for Hillary Clinton. Well, in reality, Chicago went for Hillary Clinton, and that toppled the whole state. If you look at the county-by-county map, the vast overwhelming majority of Illinois actually went for Donald Trump. Now, I have up on the screen here, I think. All right. I have my opening verse is found in Isaiah chapter 24, verse 20. I thought I had it up on the screen, but I don't. Isaiah chapter 24, verse 20. It gives kind of a metaphor of the world, and it says the earth staggers like a drunk. It trembles like a tent in a storm. It falls and will not rise again, for the guilt of its rebellion is very heavy. We in America and Europe as well, because all the Israel, the focal point of Scripture, the focal point of God's covenant, of course, is Israel. So everything hinges that it's a pivotal entity in the world. And this is what's referring to. When it gives this metaphor about the earth, is referring to the condition of really Israel, God's people in relationship to Him. And He said that the drunk, the stubborn, stagger like a drunk, a wind and tent falls down. And it says, for the guilt of its rebellion is very heavy. We in America and in Europe are suffering the guilt of the rebellion that we have encountered, that we allow to exist in our homelands. Now, in 5 days, Donald Trump will become President of the United States. Around noon on Eastern time, he's going to stand there in front of the Capitol, and he's going to take his oath of office, and he'll become the 45th president. Now, not everybody is happy about this. There are those who among us who feel, finally, at last, perhaps our long nightmare is over. But there are others who are claiming that the nightmare is just going to begin. Donald Trump is going to begin the nightmare upon our nation. And excuse me. And hundreds and thousands of people are expected to be in Washington, D.C. next Friday. Somewhere in excess over 1 million people visiting D.C. for the inauguration. But of that million plus, they expect upwards to around 200,000 protesters. 200,000 protesters to demonstrate and protest the inauguration of Donald Trump. Some of those who are going to be protesting, some of the groups have actually gone and got a permit. A lot of people are just coming to protest. But some of the groups that actually went and got a permit are a group called Act Now to Stop War and End Racism, the Democratic Socialists of America, Disrupt J20, Progressive Independent Party, National Action Network, People's Power Assembly, and these people, along with many others, are coming to Washington, D.C. to shut down the inauguration. They want to stop it from occurring. One organizer of Disrupt J20, I believe it is, he stated, his name is David Thurston, not that it matters to us, his name would go to Bolivian along with all the losers of history, but for a little moment, he's got a little sunlight on his little moment in the sun. David Thurston, an organizer for one of the anarchist groups, and that's what these are, anarchist groups, he said, quote, "We want to shut down the inauguration. We want to see seething rebellion develop in this city and across the country." And And throughout the country, colleges, kids in college are claiming they're going to walk out of class and call campus disruption. They're going to protest and form demonstrations. One group organized there is called Socialist Students, another for Students for a Democratic Society. And all together they're claiming, and I don't know if it'll come to pass or not, but all together they're claiming there's 370, that's a lot, 370 demonstrations and protests will be held across the country next Friday. And in Arkansas, they are claiming it will be protests in both Bentonville and in Little Rock. But every major city, they're calling for disruption in every major city of the country. Roadblocks, demonstrations, blocking off interstates and blocking off entries into government buildings and all kinds of things just to disrupt. And of course, we advise people not to do any extensive traveling next Friday. You don't want to be caught in the interstate going through St. Louis and have your car stop where you can sit for perhaps hours would be the best thing, considering it's better than being pulled out of the car and being beaten. And I've heard people say, well, they won't stop me, I'll just drive right through the protesters. Well, that might sound good if you're the front car, but if you're 40, 50, 60, 70 cars back, you can't help it, you know. You can't even see the protesters. They're a mile ahead of you. So it's not a good thing. You need to stay home on that day. Now, because of that, we're being told, I know you've all heard it on the news, seen in the newspapers, that we live in a divided nation. We are told that. After the election of Donald Trump, we are told we live in a divided nation. Now, and people can't understand why. I've seen people on TV, newscasters, conservatives, they can't understand why. Why are we living in this divided nation? What is the stress? What is the reason? Why the term, why this division? Why can't we just understand, you know, we want to have a peaceful transfer of power. Why this division? Why this hatred? Now, Mitch Kim, he's a Asian fella from Wheaton, Illinois. And he is pastor of the Wellspring Alliance Church. So he's one of them. But here's what he said. This Sunday, talking about today, I will encourage our people to continue the messy and mundane work of loving one another across political, generational, ethnic, and gender lines. Our diverse church can easily be divided by this election. While some sigh in relief because of this contested values may now be upheld, others, you see what side he's on. Some, he said, some may find relief that their values upheld. But then he says, while some sigh in relief because the contested values are now upheld, others grieve in despair over the devaluing of women, minorities, and immigrants. In the midst of differences and diversity, Christ empowers us to a Trinitarian unity without uniformity. The division of our nation can only be healed by the unity of the church, is what he says. Another fellow, who's pastor of a church in Seattle, Washington, Aaron Cho, I think you know what that would be. That would be like Chinese. That's something. Aaron Cho, C-H-O. And the picture indicates that. He says, we are a multi-ethnic body here at this church, and suffice it to say, many in our family are hurting, angry, devastated, and afraid after Tuesday's election result. We gathered with our pastoral team and prayed about how we would engage in this post-election period. All of our pastors were receiving emails, calls, and texts from members who are struggling. We couldn't ignore it. We had to address it. We decided to host a time of lament, prayer, and support Wednesday evening. Our pastors decided to change Sunday's schedule and have each pastor offer a scripture reading and reflection. We've invited the church to unleash. Since the election, we've documented... Excuse me. I think I missed part of his quote. We invited the church to... respond by placing a sticky note of lament, confusion, and or action step on the cross. I guess they have a cross. And they're supposed to come up there and put a lot of sticky notes on the cross, telling your inner feelings. And our response is not about any alignment with party. Of course not. Oh, we're not about any alignment of party or candidate. It's about the grievance of our democracy, empowering a candidate who is again and again demonstrating a posture of racism, sexism, Islamophobia, and the list goes on. Yeah, we're not taking positions of party or candidates. But one candidate was a horrible, terrible person. Our hearts are heavy and we chose to sit in the murk and mire of our nation's depravity and seek Christ, incarnation of peace, love, and hope. And, not to be outdone, Morris Dees, in a recent fundraising letter we got here just a few days ago, he said, if you are as upset as we are about the presidential election, I urge you to join us in a fight against the barrage of hate that Donald Trump's victory, go to the next page, has unleashed. I think I'm supposed to have those on the screen. There we go. I just didn't keep up. Since the election, we've documented countless acts of intimidation and harassment across the nation as white supremacists celebrate Trump's victory. We are at a perilous moment of our country. The election emboldened far-right extremists who reject our country's deeply held values. More than any time in decades, we're seeing hate and extremism out in the open. And I don't have it here, but then he says, send money. Because we got all we got all these projects. We got to send this law enforcement agencies. And what they do, they send, they get millions of dollars every year. We're wondering why we're losing this in our nation. Well, one of the reasons is because we're just plain being outspent. And so they sent all their packages of in their called, what are they called? Teaching tolerance to schools and so on. But we're being constantly told we live in a divided country. And it's true. We do live in a divided country. But why are we divided? Why do we have this division? Now we're told we have this division, we have this divide because you and I, you're the reason for the division. The deplorables, the angry white voters, they have caused this great divide. The global elite believe the Hillary Clinton type. They believe that their worldview is so wonderful that they should be anointed to lead us to a utopia, a world of peace and eternal bliss. And what is happening here then is they're angry because people, the white world is not falling lockstep any longer. For years, it seems like we did, but now there's a resistance growing on. And that's why you had just recently, back in June, you had, we're all familiar with, the Brexit vote. Everybody was being told in England and that only dumb people want to vote to leave the EU. Only the uneducated want to vote to leave the EU. Nobody wants to, only those nasty people. Everybody, all the smart people, want to stay in the European Union because that's what the Brexit vote was about. And a lot of people were angry because the European Union was controlling the immigration policy of England and Scotland and Ireland or North Ireland and Wales, and the people didn't like that. And so they decided to vote to leave the EU. But they're being told, all the posters, all the polls that are being taken, says, oh, it's going to fail. Nobody wants to leave the EU unless you're stupid and uneducated. But when election time came, of course, what happened? We know that all those people who were shamed into not supporting the leave movement of Nigel Farage, they voted to leave the EU. And, of course, the establishment was shocked by that. But anyway, you have that. Then you got in England or in Denmark, you got a growing party. I think the second national party in Denmark called the Danish People's Party, the Five Star Movement in Italy, the Alternative Germany Party, and we're on the verge of possibly Marine Le Pen being elected president of France, the Golden, or the National Front, and then called the Golden Dawn Party. We're familiar with that. What's going on is all these countries are trying to reclaim their borders. They're saying, wait, we don't like this globalism. What's going on? We don't want to be part of that. And they're trying to reclaim their borders. And so we see this growing nationalism that is growing throughout the country. And it's because white people are not wanting to embrace this globalism any longer. They want to reclaim the control of their own borders. But we are being told, that the reason, and we're being told this continually and constantly, the reason that this is happening, this nationalism is growing, is because white people don't understand how wonderful integration and invasion and immigrants are. We just don't understand it. We're not able to keep up with the change. We're not willing to accept the change. There's something wrong with us because we're not embracing the change, and we're scared. We're scared when we see strange faces that don't look like us, you know, because they got a headband on, and they're from Saudi Arabia or some Middle East country or from North Africa. When we see strangers on the street that don't look like us, we become frightened. That's what we're told. We become frightened. We're scared. We can't accept a change. And how much better off it will be if we'll just kind of embrace people, just reach out and take them to our arms and just love them and understand we're all people. Kumbaya. We're all one people. And but if white people just get over their prejudice and get over their hate and bigotry, then it'll be a wonderful world. That's what we're being told. But these nasty white people, they're just resisting now. They're resisting England, they resist in Denmark and Germany and France. They're resisting everywhere. Now they're resisting here in the United States. And so the election of Donald Trump was a sign of that resistance. Putin himself may have been an early sign of a national leader standing up for nationalism. And that's why there's been a world hatred towards Putin. But here in America, everybody thought, we all being told that Hillary Clinton was going to win. It was a slam dunk for her because all the smart people are going to vote for Hillary. We already know that. And if you're voting for Donald Trump, then obviously you're not a smart person. And everybody understood that. And so people who were being asked by the pollsters, are you going to vote for Trump or Hillary? Well, if I say I'm for Trump, they'll think I'm a dumb person. So they'll say, oh, I'm going to vote for Hillary. Or I haven't decided. And oh, do you have a college... what's your college level at? Oh, I've got a college degree. Okay, well, you'll be in Hillary camp, you know, something like that. You know, because that's how they thought. All the smart people were going to vote for Hillary. But when election time rolled around, it didn't work out that way. It turned out that the college-educated people actually broke for Donald Trump. And women broke for Donald Trump also. So they were all wrong. But nevertheless, so often conservatives like Hannity, they'll rail on about how their ideas aren't working. They say the liberal ideas aren't working. The ideas of Obama aren't working. And he and other conservatives will point out to all the failures of the Obama administration and say, can't they see their ideas, the programs, aren't working? Can't they see that? Because somehow they believe that Obama and the liberals and the globals really are just really part of us, and they want what's good for America. I get tired of people saying, Obama loves America. He wants what's good for America. He just has a different idea. And I think to myself, no, he doesn't. He don't love America. Where do you get this idea? Why? You know, if you love something, you don't try to change it. I mean, it's the way it works, you know. And, but they say that his ideas aren't working. Can't they understand that? And here's the thing, is they know their ideas aren't working. It's not like it's a big revelation to Obama or to these globalists. Don't you know your ideas are working? They know they're not working. They know that. It isn't. But the difference is, why? Why aren't their ideas? In their mind, I believe anyway, in their mind, the reason why their program is not working is simple. Because they haven't been given enough power. Give them enough power, their ideas will work, their programs will work, but as long as they're not given the power to implement their programs properly, then of course they're not going to work. Because it could be a world of a utopia or eternal bliss, and they just got to give them a program and institute it and get them going and get them engaged, and once they are, then it will work. But they're not working now. Why? Because you and I are in the way. All these white racists out here, all these white nationalists, or white people in general, white Christians particularly, you're just in the way. It isn't their programs aren't working, or they have to be told they're not working. In their mind, the reason they're not working is because we are in their way. You remove white Christians out of the way, and their program is going to work perfectly. I remember when a week or so ago, when Obama was talking about Putin and the Russians hacking the DNC, and they said, Obama says, "Oh, I don't understand why people can't understand the Russian involvement." He said, "Don't they understand Putin and the Russians are our enemy? And we," referring to himself, "we here, we're on the same team. Putin's not on our team, we're on the same team." I'm thinking to myself, I don't think Obama's on my team. Where do we get the idea that Obama's on my team? Obama's not on my team. He's on the team of the globalists. He's not on the team of white Christians. But nevertheless, people so often think that's the case. They think that's the case with Martin Luther King. They think, well, Martin Luther King was a great patriot, a great man, a great leader. He believed in peace. He didn't believe in chaos. Didn't believe in violence. Well, he had a different method of bringing it about, different than Stokely Carmichael, perhaps, or H. Raff Brown. He had a different way of bringing it about, but nevertheless, his objective was still the same. Martin Luther King's objective was to dismantle white Christian America. He did it in more of a peaceful way, perhaps. He did it in a way that would be more subtle, in a way that would be more manipulative of white compassion. But Martin Luther King's objective was still the same. So the globalists, they're not trying to make America strong. They're trying to weaken America. And it's foolish for conservatives to try to convince them that their programs aren't working. They're aware of that. But they think they're not working again because there's just too many white Christian people are standing in their way. And this is all part of what we, this chaos, this divide, this unrest in America is all part of what that opening verse I read to you said. It said that the earth, that the America is Israel, the center point of the earth. The earth is drunk. It stumbles. It's like a wind, like a tent falling down with the wind. And what we're experiencing here in America, in Europe, among our people, among our nation, what we're experiencing is what? We're experiencing the guilt of our rebellion, and it's very heavy. We're suffering the guilt of our rebellion. The attitude of shifting blame to others, of course, has always been part of it's human nature, I guess. In ancient Israel, we're going to read here, I don't think I've got it on the screen. In ancient Israel, there was a time when Ahab was king. It was recorded in 1 Kings chapter 17 and 18. Israel was in chaos. Ahab was king. And the country was devastated. Farm production was at a standstill. The people were destitute. Ahab, the king of Israel, had sent his agents out among the countryside. They're arresting or outright killing the servants of God and anybody who taught the commandments of the Lord. And Ahab was emboldened to destroy this, what we'll call today, I mean, we may look at Obama like the king Ahab, seeking to destroy God's people. Elijah comes boldly before King Ahab, even though he knows that the king is looking for all the servants to destroy him. He comes boldly before King Ahab, and when King Ahab sees him, this is the 17th chapter of 1 Kings chapter 18, I think. Ahab sees Elijah, and he says, "So there you are. You're the worst troublemaker in all of Israel." And Elijah looked at King Ahab and said, "I'm not the troublemaker," Elijah answered. "You are the troublemaker, you and your father's house, because you have forsaken the commandments of the Lord." He said, the reason there's this chaos among our nation, among our people, is because you have forsaken the commandments of the Lord. We in this nation today, we are suffering this indignation against our people. Why? Why is the earth, in a sense, our political politics? Why is our culture? Why is it stumbling like a drunkard? Why is it like a tent being blown over by the wind? It's because we're suffering the heavy guilt of our rebellion. And even though we don't hear about it generally nowadays, but back in the 60s, it was a big theme, all those dirty, filthy hippies coming out of the university, Haight-Ashbury in New York, so was, we're entering the age of Aquarius. They even had a song about it. The age of Aquarius. The age of Aquarius was the time when peace and harmony would just come to the world and come to the universe. And this same philosophy, even though they might not use that term anymore, I don't think, the same idea is that these new ages, these people that are rebellion to our God, rebellion to our people, believe they're going to bring us to the age of Aquarius, to age of a perfect world order. And the only thing standing in the way of that is you and I, white Christians. And so we're in this division. Christian, liberals and conservatives that sit back and scratch their head and shock them. Why do we have a divided country? Why is that country divided the way it is? And so politicians and even Donald Trump think they're going to heal the divide. They're going to heal the divide. Churches think we're going to heal the divide. If we just bring the people together in Christ, we're going to heal this divide among our nation. But let me tell you something. The divide is not between white people and white people. Oh, I know there's some white liberals and so on. The divide you see is between our people and those who are not of our people. That's where the divide is at. That's why this picture that I had on the screen a few moments ago showing America in half was really not accurate, because the division among those aliens, the aliens who have come into our country, who have disrupted our country and caused this great division among our midst. And those people will never accept our worldview. If we think we're going to get all those Black Lives Matter people and Nancy Pelosi's and Harry Reid's and all those other nasty people, you think we're ever going to get them to accept our worldview? They'll never do it. It's not just an issue of people that disagreeing over where to build a landfill. These are core issues of division between two classes of people, the children of light and the children of darkness. There will never be a healing of that divide, because it can't be healed. And one of the things I've said many times, war is politics, or politics is war fought in time of peace. And they want a peaceful transition. They don't want a peaceful transition. They want war. They want to destroy us. We are at war. We're never going to get them to go along with our worldview. And we are not going to go along with their worldview. How many people here think that if they dominated all the politics of the world and could dominate every newspaper, every magazine, every radio station, how many of us would say, okay, I guess you're right. Homosexual is cool. Race mixing is the way to go. And when can I have my transgender operation? You know, are we ever going to go to their side of the battle? Are we ever going to go to the dark side? I don't think so. You can't heal this divide. It's foolish to think you can. And the reason you can't, because God made the divide, not man. God made the divide. And he tells us in Exodus 33:16, he's talking to Israel. He said, he separated us from other people. He separated us from the Negroes. He separated us from the Asians. He separated from all these aliens come. He separated us from them. We're divided from them. And in Leviticus 20:24, I am the Lord your God which have separated you from other people. God did the separation, not man. I'm going to take a little side note here, and because I think this is kind of important, maybe just interesting. A lot of people here in Arkansas and other places, people say, you probably heard people, well, I'm part Indian. And we hear this stuff, you know, I'm talking about this divide and how God has protected our people. And a lot of people have been hearing this deal that, well, they're part Indian. How many people heard that here from local people? I'm part Indian. My grandma's part Indian. My grandpa's part Indian. Okay. In a recent study called The Genetic Ancestry of African American Latinos and European Americans Across the United States, that's the name of the study. The Genetic Ancestry of African-Americans, Latinos, and European-Americans Across the United States, published in January 2015, edition of the American Journal of Human Genetics, this is a prestigious organization, they did a study of 148,000 individuals. This is considered a massive study. And not most studies, the polls, so are done with 4, 5, 6, 800, 1,000 people. This is huge. 148,000 people. Through their, through the research, they say that only about 3% of self-identified white people have non-European blood. They were shocked. They were shocked that white people are predominantly still all white. This idea that we're being told that we're all mixed up, everybody got a little bit of blood in them, we're all mixed up, isn't true. Now, with Negroes, it's true. With Hispanics, it's true. But they found white people have kept themselves primarily, exclusively white. White people have not crossed the racial barrier lines to the extent that we've been constantly told. I know when I was a youngster, I have to admit, if I confess this, when I was a youngster, 4, 5, 6, 7 years old, I remember watching the Howdy Doody show on TV and watching a little, bunch of little Indians from the Sioux Nation, and they're all sitting around a little powwow on the TV set, and they're talking about how, you know, watching eagles and all this sort of stuff that Indians do. And I'm thinking about 7 or 8 years, I think to myself, wow, I wish I was Indian. I thought, well, that'd be cool, you know, because Indians have been portrayed as such noble people. And white people, we're just oppressors. We destroy everything. We destroy the environment, destroy everything we touch. We're just oppressors. We're terrible, nasty people. But the Indians are great, noble people. So, especially in the 60s, really people started to embrace this idea that, oh, we're part Indian, we're part Indian. Now, before that, nobody thought about that. Well, it turned out it's not true. Nobody's part Indian, less than 3%. Less than 3% of self-identified white people. I'm not talking about people that are part white and identify as being mixed. I'm talking about people that are self-identified and say, I am a white person. Less than 3% have any noticeable non-European blood in their veins. And the percentage of that is only between 1 and 3.5%. Tiny fraction, which they say means that the mixing that in their bloodstream occurred between 5 and 10 generations ago. So when people, this idea that people say they're part, you know, God kept our division. He protected our people. Now some mix, no question about that. But primarily people that are self-identified as a white person, I'm white man, I'm white proud, they're white. They're not mixed with any Indian blood, even though that we have been told that. But this division occurs, and people wondered why the division. We knew there was a division. We understood that. It was evident to white nationalists. It was evident to segregationists. And that's because non-whites would never submit willingly to our dominant power. When they did submit to the dominant power, then they began to embrace white culture and white values and white heritage. Not heritage, but ideals. A perfect example of Detroit, Michigan. I've told the story many times, not going to repeat myself again, but Detroit, Chicago, New York, Philadelphia, all the Memphis, Kansas City, all these areas today that are total chaos at one time were peaceful cities. The black communities were safe. 85% of black families were intact. Mother and father were at home. Black children were safe in the streets and the hallways and darkened alleys. Young black girls weren't afraid of being raped in a darkened alley somewhere. Elderly black people were in fear. They were under a white dominant culture, a white dominant influence. And the blacks in our country, because that's what we dealt with at that time. We didn't have any of these other people here to such a very minor degree. They submitted to our culture. They submitted to us. So they identified with white characteristics and identity. That's why he people, oh, we're a black man in our neighborhood. He was a good old black boy. Well, of course, he's the only black man there. If I was the only white man in a black neighborhood, I'd kind of watch what I said too. You know, so the idea, well, I knew a black old guy. He was great. Well, fine. That's nice. I'm glad you were so proud of that. A recent study has come out. And I'm going to try to close very quickly. A recent study came out and said that We always hear about black people need more black police officers. That's why there's so many, that's why white cops are just going down the street and just mowing and killing every black person they see. We need more black police officers. We hear that, don't we? We have more police officers, black police officers on the streets, patrolling black neighborhoods, communities, and so forth. Then all this killing of the innocent black guys would be over with. It wouldn't exist. Here, a recent study has come out. Who did this study? Indiana University School of Public and Environmental Affairs. Indiana University School of Public and Environmental Affairs. They did the study. Here's what they found out. Black police officers patrolling in a white police department will be more apt to racial profile, more apt to use force, and more apt to use extreme measures upon a black suspect than a white officer. They say they can't figure that out. Why? Why is that? Why is it that you get a black cop? Why is he going to be worse on the black criminals than even the white officers? And they said, but it's true. They found that it's true. The idea of having black officers going to mean they're going to treat the black community better is a myth. But they said that changes when the percentage of the black officers reach 40%. When black officers in the department reach 40%, then the black officers basically reset themselves. The quote is, there is an inflection point at which black officers may become less likely to discriminate against black citizens and more inclined to assume a minority advocacy role or become neutral enforcers of the law. In other words, when the black officers reach 40%, they can then, up until 40%, they're identifying with the dominant culture that they are in a part of. That's why blacks in Detroit, blacks in Memphis, blacks in all your major cities throughout our history, always were a good community. They copied and tried to develop and act like white people. But when that reaches 40%, in law enforcement, then they re-identify themselves. They no longer identify themselves with the white police force. Now they begin identifying themselves with the black community. And then they become more, possibility of them, they become black again, I guess what it amounts to. You know, and but we've always known that. White nationalists have always known that. We've always known that that would be the case, but we're ridiculed for it. Blacks tend to act white when they're in the minority. Repeat that. Blacks tend to act white when they're in the minority, but as their percentages grow, then they reset themselves and begin to act black. So they act white when they're minority, but as they become more in number, then they reset and then they begin acting black. So the country is divided. Part of the reason is because black people identify as being black first, Americans second. White people identify themselves as being Americans first, and their race second. Non-whites primarily have a greater identity with their racial heritage than white people do, and so throughout the country, people identify themselves with their racial type. You know, you're black, you're white, or Asian, or whatever the case may be. But a white person doesn't do that. What is his primary identity? I'm an American. I'm an American. Or black, I'm a black man. I'm a Hispanic. I'm a Latino. You know? And I'm not sure if I made it a gang sign, you know. But whites identify themselves. So, you know, this divide is here. It's been here for a long time. Most people never saw it because blacks were submitting to the dominant culture. But it was always here. It was always present. It was always among us. And that's what the segregation is. The white nationalist years, by saying it's here, don't we understand? As the numbers grow, we're going to pay the consequence. We're going to pay the price for it. And the people in the churches say, oh, you're a racist. You're an evil person. And now it's upon us. Now we're seeing the consequences of this divide. It's been here all along, but now we're seeing the consequences of it. In Deuteronomy 28:43, I might have this on the screen. No, I don't. All right. Deuteronomy 28:43, the stranger that is within thee shall get above thee very high, and thou shalt come down very low. Deuteronomy 28:43, verse 44, he shall lend to thee, and thou shalt not lend to him. He shall be the head and thou shalt be the tail. The word lend, in every translation I have come across, means to like borrow money. But the word itself, shaltal, the Hebrew word itself, has another meaning too, that the early translators probably didn't catch on to, and I can understand. Because the word also means to be united against. To be united against. Well, I mean, I can see the early translator 200 years ago not understanding that. But when you look at it today, what is happening with these strangers that are in our midst, we understand that. The stranger that is within your gates will get above thee very high, you'll come down very low. He will be united against you, but you will not be united against him. And that's why white people today say, oh, troubled white people, they won't stick together. We don't stick together because we're not united against them. We're not united for ourselves. And this is the curse upon us. Why? Because we have been in rebellion against God. King Ahab's sin wasn't what he did. The sin our nation today, it wasn't what we did. Remember God, Elijah told Ahab, he said, because I am not the troublemaker of Israel, you are the troublemaker, you and your father's household, because you have rebelled against the commandments of God. Our nation is suffering today, on America today, suffering this divide, not because of things that Obama did, not because of things that Hillary Clinton did, not because of things that Democrats have done. We're suffering the consequence today because we as a people have been in rebellion against God. We have rebelled against His people, our own people. We no longer understand that. And in closing, you know, as we face what's going on today, Jason mentioned earlier, a lot of people think, oh, we won the war, won the battle, Trump's been elected, he's president, yay, you know, the world is all going to be sunshine and roses from now on. But, you know, it's only 4 years. In 4 years from now, are we all going to be sitting here depressed and saying, goodness sakes, Michelle Obama ran for president, she got elected. Or Elizabeth Warren. Are we all going to be as exuberant as we are today? In 4 years from now, are we all going to be really depressed? Because the 4 years went by in a moment. I can't snap my fingers, so that's why I just kind of made a motion. Are we all going to be depressed in 4 years from now? What's going to happen? Our demographics are changing. Unless Trump gets a hold of demographics, we're at a decline in our demographics. And so, in closing, Ahab looked at Elijah, and Elijah looked at Ahab and said, you're in rebellion to God, you and this whole nation. So we don't need religion. We don't need to get the right doctrine. I know most churches are trying to get everybody to get the right doctrine. We don't need to get religion. We don't need to get the right doctrine. I'm telling you how I feel. We don't need to get the right ritual. We don't need to join the right church. We don't need to understand how the calendar reads and get the right date for a feast day. We don't need that. See, we don't need, and you got to hear me out, we don't need to be a righteous nation. We don't need to be a righteous nation. What we need to be is a blessed nation. America was never righteous, but America was blessed. And we can be blessed once again. Our nation and our people can be blessed once again, not by getting the right date or the right calendar or the right feast day or the right church or the right ritual. Our people can be blessed again when we once again, what? When we as a people learn to once again love our God and love our people and no longer be in rebellion to God's calling for His servants Israel. Our Father, we thank You for this day and Your blessing and Your care for us. We know that our people are deep in darkness and deep in sin and deep in rebellion. We've been given this reprieve for 4 years. But help us to step up. Help us to understand. Help us carry forth this message of White Christian Revival. Help us to touch the hearts of our people. That there is hope. God has not forsaken our people. There is still hope for our people. And may we all learn to have that deep abiding love. To love You and to love our people. We ask in Your name, amen.